Okay, good morning, everyone. It is 9:30, December 8th. We're here in the State Capitol Building. This is the time and place that was noticed for this South Dakota Public Utilities Commission meeting. We have an agenda as well as an addendum. If it pleases my colleagues, I would move the purpose standard issues, electric one and natural gas one, to the end of the agenda. And hearing no objection, we will make that move. For the first order of business, I thought it appropriate to just spend a moment reflecting on Delaine Colbo, who we lost 3 weeks ago. I suspect most of you know Delaine had spent a number of years working for the Public Utilities Commission and really doing a phenomenal job as our legal secretary. And Delaine didn't have to work. She certainly could have retired. She had the means to do so, but she continued to work, I think, because she loved people. She loved being busy, and she loved being useful and being of service to this state and this office and these industries. Quite a remarkable woman, and her passing does leave a void in our office, and I thought it would be appropriate to just spend a couple of seconds in silence just reflecting on her dedication and what she brought to the commission. With that, we will proceed along with the rest of our agenda. Administrative item number one is the approval of the minutes of an ad hoc commission meeting, two of them, one on September 8th and the other on September 23rd. The minutes have been circulated. Are there any corrections? Hearing none, is there a motion to approve?
Motion to approve the minutes.
Motion has been made. We'll proceed to vote. Hansen?
Aye.
Colbeck?
Aye.
Johns votes aye. The motion carries 3-0. With that, we will get an update from Ms. Gregg on the affairs of the Consumer Affairs Division.
Thank you, Chairman Johnson. The commission has received a total of 93 contacts since the last report was prepared for the November 24th, 2009 commission meeting. 17 of the contacts involved telecommunication service, 42 of the contacts involved electric service, 8 contacts involved natural gas service, 1 contact involved gas and electric service, 3 contacts involved cell phone service, 1 contact was related to the Keystone Pipeline, 11 contacts were related to the Do Not Call Registry, and 10 contacts related to issues not regulated by the PUC. 2,349 of the 2,408 complaints received in 2009 have been resolved.
Thank you, Ms. Gregg. Are there any questions? Hearing none, we will proceed to natural gas item number 2. Which was a filing made by MidAmerican Energy for approval of a refund plan. MidAmerican, comments?
None, Mr. Chairman.
Great, thanks very much. Staff, any comments?
Thank you, Chairman. This is a matter with dealing with a refund from Northern Natural Gas regarding a very old case, the Kansas ad valorem tax refund issue. If I do have a brief summary of what that involved, if you care to hear it, hopefully it won't take too long. Enacted in 1978, the Natural Gas Policy Act allowed natural gas producers to pass on to consumers taxes on production, but not on property. The Federal Energy Regulatory Commission determined at that time that the Kansas ad valorem tax was a production tax. FERC confirmed this ruling in 1983, 1986, and 1987. In 1988, the United States Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit asked FERC to clarify this decision. 5 years later, FERC completed its investigation of the matter and reversed all past decisions declaring the Kansas ad valorem tax as a property tax that could not be passed on to consumers. FERC ordered natural gas producers to refund the tax to consumers back to the 1988 court decision. In 1996, the D.C. Circuit Court agreed with the Commission that the ad valorem tax could not be passed on to consumers and directed FERC to order producers to refund customers for ad valorem taxes collected from 1983 to 1988. In 1987, the court affirmed this decision, denying a request to waive interest on the refund. According to FERC, producers at the time of 1999 owed approximately $129 million in principal and $210 million in interest, totaling $339 million in refunds. That was as of 1999. Since then, I participated in proceedings down in Kansas City regarding this issue, where the producers met with Pipelines, who bought the gas from the producers originally under the old regimen, and ultimately with the LDCs that were served by the pipeline. And through those meetings, there was a negotiations took place where the whole refunding and all the issues associated with this matter were ultimately settled out. And refunds have, in bits and pieces, as each producer settled and each refund amount for each producer was determined, the refunds have been coming forth since then. This filing states that this would be the last refund from Northern Natural Gas. Given that, I looked at the allocations, and I would everything looks fine, and I would move to approve the refund plan.
Any questions? Mr. Jacobson, it sounds as though the legal issues were resolved, you know, quite some time ago. Settlements just took, you know, this long?
I believe so. It's been quite some. I used to get information on this proceeding on a regular basis, and it's just been trickling in over the last couple of years, but I believe that is right. It just, there's so many producers involved with this, it just took a long time to reach agreement with all of them.
Well, and this is quite a small amount, and so given that, you know, it probably doesn't make sense for the commission to get too nervous about exactly the right way to, you know, find exactly the right consumer to make sure that people are made whole from the past. I mean, can you talk to us quickly about the efficiency of using this refund mechanism?
Yeah. Number one, using the purchase gas adjustment is probably the most reasonable and cost-efficient way to do this. You know, ultimately, there was, back in the days when this was under discussion, there was quite a bit of talk about trying to hunt down the people, and even back 10 years ago, it was a nightmare. So, just, you know, this is as fair and as reasonable a method as any to do it. And it is being refunded during the heating season, which we always appreciate, as opposed to waiting for the next annual reconciliation, which is what the tariff would normally call for. And it's such a small amount that it makes sense to do it during this heating season at this time.
Well, and of course, this is the money flowing the right way. I mean, this is, you know, better for consumers, but we wouldn't want to overstate the impact of this. I mean, this would be pennies per account in South Dakota.
That's correct.
Okay. Other questions? Hearing none, any comments or action?
Motion in NG09-008 that the commission approve the refund plan.
Motion has been made. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, we'll proceed to vote. Hanson?
Aye.
Colbeck?
Aye.
Johnson votes aye. The motion carries 3-0. With that, we'll move to telecommunications item number one, dealing with the filing for an approval of an opt-in wireline interconnection agreement between Quest and MCC Telephony in the Midwest. Today, shall the commission approve that agreement? Any comments from either MCC Telephony of the Midwest or Quest? Hearing none, Ms. Semler?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The agreement was properly filed and executed. It does not appear to contain discriminatory language. No comments were filed. Staff recommends approval.
Any questions? Hearing none, is there any action? Oh, yeah, Commissioner Colbeck?
I don't have any questions.
Okay, any action?
I would if I could turn on my microphone. I will move that the commission approve the interconnection agreement.
A motion has been made, and I'll second it as required. Is there any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, we'll proceed to vote. Hanson?
Aye.
Colbeck?
Aye.
Johnson votes aye. The motion carries 3-0. The second telecommunications item can be found on our addendum, and it is the matter of a filing for approval of an interconnection agreement between Alliance and Mid-Continent. One moment. Does counsel for either party have any comment? Yes, Mr. Curtis, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the Commission. My name is Dave Gertis. I'm a lawyer from Pierre, and I represent Mid-Continent Communications. This is switch to access agreement, or a interconnection agreement, excuse me, which the parties have labored on for a long time, and we finally have arrived at, the parties have finally arrived at agreement as to the content of the agreement, and we therefore ask for the Commission's approval. And I will try to answer any questions if there are any.
Any other party wish to make comment? Hearing none, staff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Kara Simler for staff. Staff has no concerns with the content. It was properly filed and executed, no discriminatory language. Today is the day that the comment period actually runs. So staff would recommend approval contingent upon no last minute comments are filed today. I don't expect any, but would make that caveat.
Perfect, thank you, Ms. Simler. Any questions for any party? One for Ms. Moore or Mr. Gertis or Ms. Simler. I mean, it seems though the Commission had been told last time we visited this issue more generally that things were going to go real quickly. You know, it's been, I mean, I'd kind of forgot about this. I mean, it's been a few months. Is there something in particular that was there anything the Commission did that slowed this down, or any insight for us? Because I just remember timing was a big source of dispute when the Commission dealt with this issue generally in a different docket. Ms. Moore?
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Meredith Moore, appearing on behalf of Alliance Communications this morning. We had stipulated in regard to that docket that you just mentioned, as it dealt with the waiver of the rural exemption for Alliance, we had stipulated as to a waiver of that exemption as of July 1 of 2009, and thereafter began discussions with regard to the interconnection agreement. I think the most significant issue that the parties undertook discussions on related to the manner in which they would interconnect, and there were some different discussions with regard to whether that would be via construction, through the ordering of facilities, and potentially even at one point a public internet connection. And I think that was the level of detail that essentially slowed negotiations down somewhat, because it involved discussions by both of the respective parties, technical people that simply, that the lawyers simply didn't have the requisite expertise to talk about. So I know that's what took the majority of the time.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, I think probably there was one other thing that affected this, and perhaps it's just something that can't be addressed. Alliance, as is their right, chose not to do anything toward negotiation until July 1st. And so we had attempted, Mid-Continent had attempted to get the ball rolling earlier, and we didn't. And so we now do have an agreement. That's water under the bridge, but I do say that for future reference, it may be the Commission may want to entertain some mechanism which gets the parties to the table sooner in the process. Because I've got the agreement here. That's how thick it is, and it takes a long time to do it. And it may not be fair to the parties for it to take as long as it did. There are no recriminations involved in what I'm saying. I'm just being factual and saying that maybe this is something the Commission needs to look at.
Well, and I regret to admit that I didn't go back and listen to the audio of this discussion from back in June or whenever the Commission dealt with it, or maybe even before that in the spring. But is there a legal reason? I mean, Ms. Wiest, are we able to instruct someone to begin negotiations prior to when the rural exemption is, or the rural safeguards are put aside? I mean, I don't remember.
Right. I think that was part of the problem, and I think there were some legal standards that Mid-Continent was arguing in that case, and what ultimately happened then is that the parties stipulated as to how they would proceed, and the Commission approved that.
That's right. There was stipulation. I remember that now. Okay. Well, I mean, I just asked because we were led to believe when we discussed this, you know, quite a number of months ago, that timing was really important because you were dealing with market conditions and market entry, and you know, the commission should be careful to what extent it limits market entry. You know, once you've got a competitive environment, and July 1 was a while ago, so I just thought I would ask. So thanks to the parties for cluing me in. Any other questions?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I would just like to congratulate the parties. I, and looking at the agreement from what we've seen of it, at least it, I've been able to look at it, at least. From that standpoint, I think it was very creative, and I had always heard that bill and keep was a non-starter, and to see that that is a part of it, although of course it suggested at a certain potential imbalance area. Could someone help me with, I'm concerned about the a future challenge in doing the traffic study once there's a potential imbalance. Is there a potential, does it specify what type of study will be conducted or how it will be conducted, anything of that nature?
I cannot answer that question, Commissioner Hansen. Unfortunately, J.G. Harrington did most of the work on this agreement, so I can't speak to that technicality.
All right, thank you. It's just a concern. I'm very, very pleased to see that all of the parties were able to work through such what I would consider a pretty complex situation and get through some of their, at least from my standpoint, what I understood were absolutely off the table, not to be a part of an agreement, and to see that folks were able to work that out. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And Commissioner Hansen, I can actually speak to your question if you would like me to.
Yes, please.
J.G. Harrington and I negotiated the terms of that agreement, and we specifically discussed the bill and keep arrangements as well as any traffic study that might need to be done. Because of the exchange of traffic under these circumstances, the expectation is that it will be evenly balanced and should not change significantly for the duration of the agreement. So from that standpoint, there was a recognition of the type of traffic that would be at issue as well as the amount of that, and that simply did not justify the significant expense that would have been involved in conducting a traffic study under the particular circumstances. Did talk about what would happen in the event that the traffic would be out of balance, and I know have some communications that are not memorialized in this agreement as to how we would go about that. So I don't anticipate that being a problem in the future, and Mid-Continent's attorneys were certainly good to work with and were very reasonable during those discussions. So I would think that if there were something to come up, that we would certainly be able to reach a resolution fairly easily.
Well, in some ways, those are surprising words. Thank you. Appreciate hearing them. Thank you.
Well, I think it's an excellent question. I'm a little irritated at Commissioner Hansen for reminding me of our weeks of our lives wasted discussing the traffic studies. Not wasted. Valid legal arguments on both sides. But other questions? Hearing none, are there any comments or action?
Mr. Chairman, I'll move in TC09-099 that the Commission approve the interconnection agreement.
Motion has been made. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, we'll proceed to vote. Hansen?
Aye.
Colbeck?
Aye.
Johnson votes aye. Motion carries 3-0.
Mr. Chairman, may I have a point of personal privilege?
Absolutely, Mr. Gerdes.
I was taken by your moment of silence for Delaine Coble. Maybe you and some of the members of the staff don't know this, but Delaine Coble came to this commission from my law office, and she worked with our firm for many years before she came here, and she was probably one of the best legal secretaries I've ever seen, and you know how qualified she was from working with you. And she was the same sunny person, and she was the easy person to work with at our office that she was here. And so she deserves all the accolades that she gets from the members of your staff. And I just want to second what has been said.
Well, thank you, Mr. Curtis. I mean, very well put, and it tells you a lot about Delaine that she would never answer my questions about why she was fleeing Madam Curtis and Thompson and you specifically. So, thanks, Mr. Curtis. With that, we will move to our PURPA dockets. We'll take up. There may be some efficiencies of allowing some liberality in discussing them both. Some of the concepts are similar, so unless there's an objection, we would pull up the electric and the natural gas PURPA standards at the same time. And commissioners, what's your pleasure? I mean, I feel as though we've had lots of input. I don't know that I necessarily have to have any parties reiterate their stance or provide any prefatory comments, but if you'd like them, we can go to them. Otherwise, we'll just go to questions or comments.
I reviewed the material. I think that I'm pretty much of the mindset. I know what I want to accomplish here today. So okay. I don't know if any other comments this late in the game would influence that one way or another.
I know where I'm going with it. I'm very curious to know what my fellow commissioners' opinions are and thoughts are. I don't know if you want to have someone just for the purposes of those who are tuning in for the first time or audience to someone to set it up and explain just where we are, but that's, as chairman, your prerogative.
Oh, I think that's valid. That's probably a decent investment of, you know, 45 seconds with all that it would take, but the federal government through the 2007 energy bill indicated that the states and other entities were going to be forced to evaluate different new standards to PURPA. There were a number of standards for electric and two for natural gas. The commission has the option of either adopting those standards, rejecting them, or adopting them in part. And for electric, they deal with integrated resource planning, with rate design modifications to promote energy efficiency, and with smart grid, two different standards with smart grid. For natural gas, they deal with energy efficiency prioritization, and then with rate design to promote energy efficiency. With that, that's very cursory, so let's see what I've missed.
Oh, very good. I appreciate that. I had actually, if I were chair, I'd have probably turned to a staff member to give it.
Well, that would have been smarter because they would have done a better job than I did. So,
very well done. Thank you.
With that, let's go ahead and open it up to comments. You know, we'll sort of start with the electric, but certainly if you want to address both during your comments, I think that's fine. Let's go into the IRP first. Any comments? I'll kick it off by saying I think we heard from just about everybody how expensive and technical a process IRP specific for a state, specific on a regulatory time frame can be. I'm not entirely convinced that that a new process in South Dakota would be worth it. I did hear a number of us indicate that we felt there was some value to those work products, though, that are done in other states. I would turn to my colleagues as, I mean, what do we do if we want that information, but we don't necessarily want to impose a cost? Are there options available to us?
Oh, can I call you later?
Go ahead.
Sounds good. Thanks.
Bye-bye. Just a reminder to everybody that please mute your phone when you're not... when you're not speaking. Thanks.
Specifically to the IRP, this is Commissioner Kobach. I just wanted to maybe mention there's part A, part B. I think if we didn't want to impose costs, we could incorporate the language of cost effective. On part A, I think we'd have to change most of that sentence into more of a cost effective meaning. And on part B, I do have some concerns on the words priority. It says adopt policies establishing cost-effective energy efficiency as a priority resource. How would we define priority? I guess that's where I'm sitting right now.
Well, I understand that. I mean, I'm coming at it from a little bit different angle in that we had a really long discussion. I don't remember how long it was, but I remember us talking about, you know, it just seems like some other jurisdictions get to be a little bit more in the driver's seat when utility companies are making strategic decisions about how to serve load and how to serve customers, because those commissions are getting input into the assumptions that are going into this, you know, what's spitting out the output. There was some suggestion, perhaps made by Mr. Rizlov, I don't remember, that, you know, perhaps if one of our LSEs, load-serving entities, is required to do an IRP in another jurisdiction, that they would also file that exact same work product, no additional work, but that work product with us, and that then it would then be the prerogative, perhaps not obligation, but prerogative of the commission to have an open meeting where we would discuss with that LSE what assumptions did they provide, and do we feel like the outcome of that IRP is as consistent with South Dakota values as with some other states' values. Mr. Rizlov, I put a whole lot of words in your mouth. What did I get wrong?
Nothing. The idea that an IRP is conducted with models that are populated with variables, and if we wish to change those variables from what other states had, I don't think that would be a difficult matter, and then see the result of the model afterward.
What about with regard to timing? That's one thing I'm struggling with. I mean, obviously, it's easiest to do it once the work product is done. There is perhaps more direction that can be given at the front end of a process.
My experience with these models is that IRPs are conducted well in advance of the time dirt is actually turned on these projects. And basically, IRPs are forecasts of where utilities should go. So the fact that it would be filed in one state and I guess conjunctively filed in South Dakota would give us time. You know, there are a host of other issues, but I don't think the timing is a huge issue. And I think it would give us maybe, in some cases, and we've seen this with an IRP, but in a recent filing, they're planning for 20, 25 years down the road with these IRPs.
So I'd like to pause and just give staff and any of the parties that intervene an opportunity to speak up if they think kind of what I'm suggesting, you know, thinking out loud here, if there's a problem with that we haven't foreseen. I'm not hearing anything, so we'll take that as that there is no strenuous objection to what we're talking about. Commissioner Hansen?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think it was very enlightening that that no one, certainly not any of the utilities, but none of the staff recommendations and no one else to come before us recommended that we mandate the IRPs. And I think that it was also enlightening that staff provided some options to us, which we have just been discussing, and the opportunity to, I think one of the greatest opportunities we have in the Midwest is that on the East and West Coast, they have a tendency to do things long before we do them, and we have the opportunity to see what mistakes they make and financial challenges that they incur as a result of it, and then we have the opportunity to do it right, so to speak. And I think to a lesser extent, having the option to see what Minnesota or some other state accomplishes or pursues through IRPs, mandating them, gives us an opportunity to provide that unique opportunity to make adjustments to it. Not that we should stand by the sideline as they're developing them, but we should also participate in that process. So I don't know if it's my desire not to have bureaucracy and not to have extra regulation that we don't need, but I think it makes great sense to pursue it from that standpoint.
The two wrinkles that occur to me as, I think through this, one, state statute does require a 10-year plan, which at least for those utilities that are already submitting an IRP to the commission is probably totally redundant. I mean, somebody correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm trying to think of something that would be in a 10-year plan that wouldn't be in an IRP. Now, of course, there are entities that are not rate regulated by the commission that are required to do 10-year plans that would obviously not have to do an IRP. So I'm not suggesting getting rid of that state statute altogether, but I just sort of wonder, I mean, is there a problem with requiring both? And if so, You know, I suppose the statute change isn't that difficult to come by. Any thoughts by anyone? I'm just flawless. No one can find any fault with my logic today. The other minor wrinkle is that now we're going to have a situation. I mean, is there a concern that some, let's presume, I don't remember exactly what the landscape is, but if we presume that there are some jurisdictions that don't require an IRP, or rather that there are some of our investor-owned utilities that are doing business, not doing business in any states that require an IRP, they sort of now have a little bit different regulatory interface with this commission. I mean, we're asking a bunch of questions of maybe four companies we're not asking of two, or five that we're not asking of one. I think that's fine, and I think we probably always have the opportunity to call that sixth or that fifth in and ask them questions about what their long-term plans are to serve South Dakota load. Concerns? Mr. Islov?
I'll start at the end. Black Hills and Northwestern certainly don't have significant load with regard to their operating entities that serve South Dakota. Black Hills, though, in the recent rate case, did file an IRP. Northwestern is so small that when they add, we're seeing just tiny increments of power on a relative basis, and that makes it more difficult compared to an NSP who is preparing IRPs for 8,000 plus megawatts of load. And so when we go from 8,000 down to 300, it just makes it a bit more challenging to pay for an IRP because they don't necessarily cost any more or any less, depending on the size of the utility.
So my question for, you know, counsel for staff, as well as for, you know, Ms. Wiest, do we know how much latitude we get here to change our adoption of a standard? I mean, can we tinker enough with this wording to do what we're suggesting?
I'll look to Rolaine for help, but I think there's a lot of latitude. I mean, I think the federal requirement is that you simply consider it and then apply it as it works or doesn't for our state. I think there's a lot of latitude, and Rolaine maybe has a differing idea, but that'd be my opinion.
Yes, I think there is latitude in the way that the provision that related to this standards was written into law, and it does refer to integrating energy efficiency resources into the utilities planning process. And so, you know, I don't know that you'd want to get too far afield of that.
Do you think working in wording that require regulated utilities to submit IRPs that are doing this in other states to this commission is too far afield?
No, I think you could, I think that would be fine.
Okay.
And I think a lot of the utilities, I thought they said that they did file a number of their IRPs with the commission at this time, or some of them at least.
Yeah, I mean, I remember getting 10-year plans on a pretty regular basis, and I remember seeing at least a few IRPs over the years, but I would suspect there'd be quite a few we haven't seen.
Sure.
Well, and I know, Commissioner Kolbeck, you've raised, I think, some important points about specific wording under A and B, and so I don't want to address that right now, but perhaps just, let's set what I'm talking about aside, because I think it maybe makes more sense to go down your path first. I think you had talked about with A, you had some comfort level with A, but maybe you wanted some modifier to indicate, you know, that cost effectiveness was a value of the commission. Am I getting that right?
Yeah, and that's actually what mailed in with your questions. If we can modify it, as Ms. Simler and Ms. Wiest had said, that if we're okay to muddle with them, then I think if we added the words cost effective to number one, that would be probably the best thing, because as we talked about mandates and other costs associated with it, I think if we stick with our, I guess in the past that's what we've always used. We've always emphasized cost effective. We don't want anything that's going to be a mandate that's going to bring in extra cost to a utility company. So if we could bring in cost effective to part A, that would be good.
Do, Mr. Smith, I see you've got your code book out. In that section where it describes rates and what the commission is to drive for rates, what's the wording there? Do they say reasonable and cost effective?
I don't think so. I wasn't looking at that section. So
yeah, I didn't presume you were, but I was...
Just and reasonable is my right.
Just and reasonable.
It's back here. I was in.
I like cost-effective. For sure, that's good. But I wonder if reasonable, integrate reasonable energy efficiency allows both LSEs and the commission a little more latitude to... Hold on, Mr. Smith has it now. Yeah, and not just in 6, but also in 8, there's some wording. Yeah, I mean, it certainly appears as though, just and reasonable is sort of the default phrase throughout that area of the code. Commissioner Colbeck, any thoughts on the benefits of cost-effective versus reasonable? I don't know that it matters. We're sort of quibbling, but any thoughts?
I would think that similarity would be the better of the two. If we wanted to keep things uniform, and if the code says reasonable, that's probably the better way to go.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I hate the word reasonable. It is so ambiguous. What's reasonable to me is perhaps not reasonable to you. Just leaves such a cost effective basically says this has to make sense from a financial standpoint. If it doesn't, then it shouldn't be pursued. And perhaps that's going too far in the other direction. Some people on a far end environmental perspective might say, hey, I don't care if it's cost effective or not, I want it done this way. So and I think that's where reasonable might come into being a problem. I prefer cost effective for my nickel's worth.
Well, I think if you hate it, then I don't like it very much either. That's I think cost-effective comes with it much of the same interpretive dilemmas that reasonable does. I mean, is it cost-effective under this cost-benefit analysis or a different one? You know, the ratepayer versus societal. But I think you're right. Clearly, reasonable is even more open to interpretation than cost-effective. So I don't have a problem going with the original suggestion of cost-effective. Well, with that, let's try to bring this back to some structure. Maybe I would also add some wording at the end of your motion, Commissioner Colbeck, to not just talk about state and regional plans, because I think that can be complicated. I mean, I don't know that we can force all of the various regional planning groups that are going on to adopt our standards, but maybe talk about the plans and the processes of the planning processes of the electric utility. Is that a friendly amendment?
Yes, that makes a lot of sense. And then when you think about it, we've got probably, I would be wrong if I guess, but over a dozen different organizations that are trying to do utility planning, state and regional planning. And another thing that probably brings into this is what is a formidable, what is a reputable regional plan? There are so many, so I don't think that's really of our place to predict what is a regional plan, what is the viable regional plan. So that would probably be to our advantage to take that language out.
And then I will address your comment on B. I think you indicated perhaps less comfort with B than A. Here's why I don't mind it as much as I first thought I did. Because I think you're right, priority resource does sort of beg a question or two. But if, when you've got the word cost-effective in there, and I suppose one other benefit of using the Hanson-Colbeck wording of cost-effective in A is that it already appears in B, so there's some nice parallelism there. But if, I mean, almost, the definition of cost-effective that I would view as would be sort of the best way to do it, the cheapest way to get a desired outcome. Well, if an energy efficiency resource approach or tool is cost effective, I can't imagine a scenario under which I wouldn't want that to be a priority resource. And even stronger wording, I mean, if it was rather than just a priority resource, the priority resource, even then, even with the, I think I'd be more comfortable. I mean, I think I'd be comfortable with it. But all of that is just to say that I'm fine with B. Other thoughts on either of either A or B?
Mr. Chairman, it's interesting because I think all of us then marked on B that priority gave us a little bit of a challenge. And I went through the same process that you've just articulated, and I appreciate that discussion on it. I do not want to have energy efficiency looked at from the standpoint where it appears that it's basically the only method that we have to eliminate some of the other opportunities. And I was debating whether to put a wording in to clarify that, such as a high priority resource, but I think it already says that as a priority, but it also, in reading it, can say that it is the number one priority, that it is the top priority to do before anything else. And I struggle with that because I recognize that when we look at energy efficiency, it brings us down the need for additional capacity, but at the same time, when you would look at a graph of it, it just brings us to a lower point than where we are at any point in time. It means that we will still need to continue developing capacity. So I struggle with it when I look at it as a priority on how it can be interpreted. And I don't know if I just wrestle with what a future commission might come up with on it. And so I'm looking for a better clarifier, whether it would say such as what I had mentioned, a high priority.
Well, there's two tiers of comfort for me. First, the difference between A and the. I mean, if you are a friend of mine, that doesn't necessarily mean to the exclusion of all other possible friends. Now, if I say, you know, he is the friend that does something, and that is one. So I think you're right to draw a distinction between, you know, A and the. I also do think, I mean, if energy efficiency is legitimately cost effective, if it meets that standard, I mean, if I can build a megawatt of virtual, you know, generation through energy efficiency, or I can build it through a less cost-effective megawatt of coal, I mean, I guess I do want energy efficiency to be a priority resource, maybe even the priority resource, if it's cost-effective.
I don't, Mr. Chairman, I don't see any disagreement in that area. I just felt that, for the record, it was important for all of us to voice our concern about that in that arena. I will struggle with it and hope that future commissions recognize that challenge. And since we can look to our staff for being here in 30 years from now, we won't have to worry about that.
Commissioner Fine.
Well, let's see how the budget address goes today. I don't know if we're here next January, so.
Commissioner, if I could interrupt, if I may. The word priority is a concern, but cost effective and modifying priority, I guess I'm going to agree with you, only in the sense that when one's doing an IRP and you have a given amount of energy efficiency that's considered cost effective, and I'll use the word guaranteed, which is maybe a shaky concept. From my point of view, it comes off the top, and what you have left is then filled in with other generation resources. So whether or not you call it priority, it would come off the top, and then you would have the rest of the load to provide for with, you know, whatever generation sources you would want. So I guess whether you leave priority in or not, in effect, it becomes the first one you're going to measure when determining how much load you'll have to serve. So in effect, it's de facto priority, it seems.
Well, as we can continue to wordsmith a little bit, certainly, I wonder about you know, to give some direction to the order writer, Ms. Wiest, I mean, do we think adding a subpart C, you know, each electric utility shall, says the main heading, and then C would be submit to the commission integrated resource plans that it has submitted in other jurisdictions? I don't know that we've got it exactly right. We can certainly give her some room to work with, but I'll look to any party or staff, commissioners or advisors to see if we're aiming in the right direction there for subpart C.
Commissioner, again, I babbled something earlier, yesterday as a matter of fact, and it was my hope that Relaine was taking good notes and converting my fractured English into words that would actually work, that would perhaps follow that intent.
You say things very well. Sometimes you say them in paragraphs. They're very poetic, but sometimes they're paragraphs. And one of the really interesting things about these standards is that, at least with the IRP ones, they, you know, in a dozen words, they sort of said a lot. Not that we have to mimic their approach in A and B with our C, but...
Now, this is Relaine. I think the language that you stated is sufficient and clear.
Well, and... Yeah, and certainly we would want to make it clear that, you know, to the extent Mr. Rizalov or Ms. Wiest have much better wording, I mean, the commissioners will get an opportunity if the order does not jive with what their intention was when they voted, we can always send the order back for redrafting. So.
Right. So the intention is that each electric utility shall file any IRP that has been submitted in another jurisdiction with the commission.
This is Brian for staff. I would just add that, you know, some like Northwestern and Black Hills have done IRPs for other things too. If you could find some language that would, you know, get, I mean, Northwestern just filed their IRP that they give to their board of directors for informational purposes. So maybe if you want to throw that in too, I don't know if jurisdictions covers that.
I would think it doesn't. I don't know the answer to this. Sometimes I wondered if utilities would run something that maybe would run just short of what they would do for an IRP for submission to a commission, that they would use for internal review, that it is so preliminary that they would not, frankly, they wouldn't want it to be a public document. And I just don't know what their processes are. I mean, I think that would certainly be information that the commission would be interested in. What I don't want to do is create a disincentive for them to do that kind of planning. I mean, I think there are all kinds of times in state governments or in the business world where people say, well, listen, if I do this, now all of a sudden, if I read the testimony of this witness, now I have to be able to respond to it at some level when I'm a witness. And so maybe I just won't read it. More planning inside of the utility company is probably better than less. But, I mean, let's hear from... I don't know to the extent we have experts from interveners on the phone, but I like Mr. Rounds' suggestion. Are there concerns with it? Any comments on that from any commissioners or advisors? Well, let's go ahead and make it broad then. And if they don't like it, you know, I mean, they had an opportunity to be on the phone, and if they don't like it, certainly when the order comes out, they can ask for the commission to reconsider. So let's make it broad. We're sort of working a little informally here, and so if somebody wants to get a lot more structured with votes on individual amendments, that's fine. But unless somebody asks for that, I would just sort of tinker with this and say submit to the commissions, to the commission, integrated resource plans that it has prepared, or its integrated resource plans. Maybe that's easiest. Again, we'll let Rizalov, Wiest, and others tinker with it, but submit to the commission its integrated resource plans. Okay, to try to bring this to a vote, I would then move that the commission approve PURPA standard, kind of one as we're dealing with it. I mean, I forget if this is 16, the first 16 or the second 16, but integrated resource planning, each electric utility shall integrate cost-effective energy efficiency resources into the plans and planning processes of the electric utility and adopt policies establishing cost-effective energy efficiency as a priority resource and submit to the commission its integrated resource plans. Discussion on the motion?
On C, already prepared, submit to the commission already prepared IRPs.
Well, I don't want everything they've ever done.
True. This is from a going forward basis, correct?
Yes.
We're not interested in last year's or year before's. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know exactly how to word that or the extent it's necessary, but I mean, I would agree with that. I don't have any problem instructing, you know, advisors to try to make sure that the order says that.
Is it going forward?
Yeah, right. Okay. So that's a friendly amendment. Are there others or unfriendly amendments? Hearing no further discussion on the pending motion, we'll proceed to vote. Hanson?
Aye.
Colbeck?
Aye.
Johnson votes aye. Motion carries 3-0. With that, we'll go into rate design to promote energy efficiency. Again, speaking specifically about electric at this time. Any comments? We can certainly break into pieces. This is another instance where no one seemed to recommend adopting the standard because they felt like much of this was standard operating procedure already. If you look at A specifically, the rates allowed to be charged by any electric utility shall align utility incentives with the delivery of cost-effective energy efficiency and promote energy efficiency investments. I think one... I mean, right now, that's not exactly what we're doing, and staff or advisors should correct me to the extent I'm wrong, but it seems to me that normally we have been dealing with energy efficiency outside of a rate case. So we're setting rates at a rate case generally along, you know, traditional regulatory measures, which is very closely linked to cost and not necessarily toward incentivizing energy efficiency. Then sort of after the fact, we're then looking into say, well, to what extent do we need to incentivize, align utility incentives with delivery of cost-effective energy efficiency? So I guess that would be my concern with A. I think it's great. There's just sometimes a lag between rates we approve from a rate case. And I mean, if we pass this, then could somebody argue that the rates currently in effect by Northwestern are not in are out of order? I mean, that they're not in alignment with a commission order released on this docket. Staff thoughts?
I can see if we're thinking along the same lines. Say we had a rate case that was a decade old. Energy efficiency, as you mentioned in our last meeting, has been talked about for a long, long time. Are you saying that this would allow them to change because of the long time that's been allowed in between rate cases?
Yeah. Although it wouldn't even necessarily need to be a long time. I mean, it would just be, I mean, right now, for instance, we've got at least two of our investor-owned utilities that have rates in effect. They're clearly legitimate rates. I mean, they've been filed, they've been approved by the commission. With Black Hills Power, those are three-year-old rates. With Northwestern, they're significantly older than that on the electric side. But there's not a lot in those rates today that align utility incentives with the delivery of cost-effective energy efficiency. In fact, I think we have argued in the past that maybe rates absent these energy efficiency filings provide a disincentive to the delivery of cost-effective energy efficiency. So I love everything that A is saying in theory. I just sort of wonder if the wording, if we're not using a more multi-step process than is envisioned with this in this congressional wording.
Well, I don't have too much problem, except for where you've got one under A, you've got one. I'm fine with that because it says cost effective in it. And under two, it does not list cost effective. I guess that's my kind of beef with that. It's promote cost effective energy efficiency investments. And then B, the policy options. I've got too many hurdles to overcome that, I think. I would like to see us adopt two. Basically because it says shall consider, and that would be limiting our options, I would think. If you shall consider, and then it gives a list of things you shall consider, I'd rather keep the door open to consider anything rather than limiting us. But as far as more specific to where we were speaking, I don't have much trouble with A at all, except for the fact that number two doesn't list cost effective.
Commissioner Hansen.
Mr. Chairman, I agree with Commissioner Kolbeck's analysis of it. I think one of the best statements in testimony from Mr. Thurber was his statement that the commission can promote energy efficiency investments without modifying base rates. And I think that's parallels what Commissioner Kolbeck was saying, because this is a situation where by adopting the rule, we basically tie our hands a little bit and direct that we pursue a particular area, and an area which we have the option to do anyway. And so I think without adopting it, it leaves us that opportunity for influencing rate design with efficiencies, et cetera, but we shouldn't eliminate entirely our ability, which I think we would be doing here, somewhat tying our hands.
Well, and I do feel as though five becomes, or not five, rather, the rate design portion becomes less necessary because we took care of the IRP energy efficiency. I mean, we've already said this is a priority resource. Ms. Wiest?
Going back to the concerns you mentioned when you first started, Chairman Johnson, I would just have two suggestions that you might want to consider. The first could be that you might want to change the shall to may if you're concerned about someone saying, well, they have to be this way. But the other one is that although you don't, you know, necessarily need to change the exact wording in there, I think that the order itself could clarify this further in stating that when we're talking about rates allowed to be charged, we're not necessarily meaning that these are base rates that are charged by the utility, but that this can be accomplished through rates that, you know, are charged in separate programs that the utilities file, I think, which would be consistent with what the commission is doing now. So you could just clarify it.
Yeah, that raises my comfort level a whole lot. Well, first off, let's do this. To narrow the scope, is anybody interested in retaining B?
No.
Okay, so we will presume B is dead. With Ms. Wee's suggestion, I do find myself liking A somewhat, in part because, you know, PERPA tells all the utilities that they have to do all these things. The really interesting thing about this one is it says that the electric utility shall, but in reality it's kind of a mandate to the commission, just that it will make sure to align utility incentives with the delivery of cost-effective energy efficiency. I do agree with Commissioner Kolbeck wholeheartedly that subpart, Roman numeral 2 should, that's not even Roman numeral, I don't know what that is, promote cost effective. I do think that phrase should be included. So we can have a vote, I would move that the commission adopt A with the cost effective included in the last line, not adopt B, and make clear in the order that the commission would have flexibility in A to do this through mechanisms outside of base rates.
Would you change the shell to me?
I wouldn't.
No.
I would not.
Mr. Chairman, perhaps we need a little discussion on that. I'm far more comfortable. Years ago, when I was in the legislature, we were told that maize are shells and shells are maize. But when I read and look at a may, it means entirely something entirely different to me. And I am far more comfortable with may, except that I'm still not totally comfortable with it. And so I need perhaps some legal guidance on that at this juncture.
Well, I think may probably gives you a little bit more flexibility if you use that word rather than shall, and in conjunction with your further explanation of what you mean by rates that you're talking about in that Part A.
Commissioner Colbeck, go ahead. If you. Oh.
I was wondering if Roland said if may shall give us more leeway or if shall may give
she
us.
Said may leeway. May give us more leeway.
Yes.
Commissioner, if I could, not a legal opinion, but the problem with the way it's written, from my point of view, if you retain the word shall, is defining rates and align utility incentives. That is FERC speak for decoupled rates. That's what it's talking about. Now, if you read it, it doesn't say decoupled rates. It says something that appears to be a statement that's hard to disagree with. But when it said the rates allowed to be charged by an electric utility shall align utility incentives delivery, the way the industry is recognizing this term is decoupled rates at this point or straight fixed variable rates. So, well, legally you may not have to define it that way. It may be a little clearer as long as the word rates is retained up above, and that could mean base rates or any other rates, to move toward the word may. And I understand the reluctance, but I look at this, I read it in a very specific way.
Yeah, I don't know, Mr. Islov, just looking at the, to a certain extent, we're the commission, right? We get to decide what those words mean. And if you look under policy options B, even the feds, listed a number of different mechanisms to align utility incentives. Some of them just as much as allowing timely recovery of energy efficiency related costs. So I'm not quite as concerned about the decoupling issue as I might be.
Excuse me, I was reluctant to let my strong prejudice show, but I thought it necessary to kick it out anyway. Thank you.
Well, the good news for you is that you get paid to make your strong opinions known, so, and we love it. Okay, well, I'll address the very legitimate question that you've both raised about may versus shall. The really important word is cost effective. Again, I ask myself, under which scenario do I think that this commission should not have incentives in place to encourage utilities to pursue cost effective energy efficiency? This is dangerous because I have a very limited historical perspective. And so people who've been around longer than I maybe can give me an idea of what scenario we wouldn't want to provide, we wouldn't want to align utility incentives with cost-effective energy efficiency. Because absent an example, I like shall.
Mr. Chairman, do you wish to vote on the entire motion? I don't even know if you've made a motion at this juncture.
I did, mostly to focus our discussion on particular wording. Now, that being said, if I get the feeling that I'm not supported by shall, I will certainly, I don't have any intention to force a vote to have this go down and have to have one of you guys bring it back up with different wording. So if you all tell me shall's a non-starter, then I guess it's going to be may.
In an effort to to get to that point without having to go through quite as much machinations, I'll make a motion to amend, since you had asked for unfriendly motions as well, that the rates, that to change the word from shall to may.
Amendment has been made. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, we'll proceed to vote. Hanson.
Aye.
Colbeck.
Aye.
Johnson votes no. The motion carries, and it's may. Any discussion on the standard as amended? Hearing none, we'll proceed to vote. Hanson.
Aye.
Colbeck.
Aye.
Johnson votes aye. Motion carries 3-0. Okay. Smart grid. Maybe we can make this quick. This was the one that it appeared. None of the interveners really liked any of these. They didn't feel, any of them were really necessary, but a lot of the heat behind these, whether they were interconnection standards with the 05 Act or obviously energy efficiency with the 07 Act, a lot of the passion has come from commissioners. I didn't pick up from any of the three of us. I'll back up. I think everyone acknowledged the real value of the smart grid. I didn't hear from anybody that this wording did a particularly good job of allowing the flexibility needed to watch smart grid really be unveiled in other places before we jump in. Is anybody in disagreement with that summary?
I don't know if I necessarily disagree with it, but out of the two, the consideration of smart grid investments and smart grid information, out of the two, I would like us to get out some sort of reporting requirement. Not necessarily the A, the B, the rate structure, the obsolete equipment, anything like that, but I'd like to see us manipulate it to some point where companies are telling us that, yes, we're considering smart grid, just as we may have them do that on a wind perspective or another renewable energy perspective. I'd like to keep up on the smart grid investments and why they're not being made or why they are being made. Just for the simple fact that I consider this to be a lot like the internet. Right now we're in the broadband mapping process, spending millions of dollars trying to catch up on what we probably should have had a record of years and years ago. So I don't know if that's a good analogy or not, but I just don't want us to fall behind, because I think that smart grid is going to have a place in the future.
I love it. Great suggestion. I mean, if I could fiddle with it a little bit, I get somewhat nervous about reporting requirements into perpetuity. We've dealt with that recently, reports that people just quit filing, and so then we have to get rid of them 20 years after everyone else has given up. I wonder if you would feel comfortable, Commissioner, with something requiring an annual report for the next, say, 3 years. I think we'll know a whole lot more in 3 years about to what extent the smart grid is going to be cost-effectively deployed in jurisdictions like South Dakota. Maybe even an end-of-year report, December 31st, and I don't know, maybe end of next year, then 11, 12, 13, maybe four. I don't know. I'm open to suggestions. And certainly if interveners feel that any of these suggestions are cumbersome or burdensome, we'd want to hear about it. And with that in mind, concerns or comments from staff or advisors?
I think that, I think it's important that they report, but I hate these requirements go on and on and on. I think the 3 years is an excellent idea, and I think if you feel the need to get additional reporting after that, it's easily amended.
I like the time period also of it sunsetting. However, do we know, just as for an example, the stimulus grants that were handed out, do we know, is that going to take them 3 years to turn those on? 3 years might be a small amount of time by the time they get out there, deploy it, and actually get some good data.
Well, I think the bigger concern may be, most people, only one of six got stimulus funds. And so maybe a bigger question is for those that didn't get stimulus funds, but my bias is, I don't know whether it takes 5 years, 10 years, or 30 years, but at some point everybody's going to have this, I think. So maybe for those who don't have any ready capital to invest in this, 3 years really is a tight time frame. Other comments?
Mr. Chairman, I was all set to vote against this and until hearing the articulate presentation by Commissioner Colbeck, I think that it could be very cumbersome and costly, and it seems somewhat unnecessary, but I think Commissioner Colbeck has made some very good arguments. I may wish to wordsmith on the motion, which I haven't heard yet, but I'm clearly moved more in the direction of after hearing what his arguments were.
Well, let's maybe between the three of us, we can try to cobble something together here again so we can discuss specific wording. Perhaps each electric utility shall file with the commission an annual report indicating the extent to which they have deployed smart technologies, are planning to deploy smart technologies, and reasons and rationales for those determinations. Reasons, rationale, and information on those decisions. I mean, I don't know.
Just a comment on the consideration of smart grid investments on the in A. Some of those, you know, just to give them a guideline, we could say something like that may include, but not are limited to, total cost effectiveness, improved reliability, securities. Just to give them some direction. I'm not saying that that's what their reporting requirement will have to be, but.
Well, that list, I think, is more a list of potential benefits of smart grid.
Okay.
But I kind of like where you're going about giving them some suggestions for what would be included in such a report.
And that's really, the second one is really what I'm looking for, the cost effectiveness of it. If a company comes up and says, smart grid technology is not cost effective for us because A, B, and C, that's what I'd like to know. I think security will be more on a national scale. System performance is probably going to be on a more of a national scale also, but and societal benefit, that's going to be on our nation. But the total cost and the cost effectiveness, those two things, maybe we can narrow it down to those two and just give them some sort of direction as to, you know, our smart grid technology will be deployed. It's not quite cost effective now, or we determine that it is cost effective, so we're going to make our move in 2013.
This feels like rules to me. And okay. The good news is we do have rulemaking authority for these standards. So perhaps, I think you're right, we owe them better guidance than what I had thrown out. Perhaps we can do that in rules. So we have more of an opportunity. My problem with passing some right now is, I mean, listen, they're not here.
Yeah.
I mean, they obviously feel like they've, you know, said their piece. Perhaps they didn't expect the commission would take quite as much an interest in these dockets as it appears as though we are. So I guess I'd kind of like to give them an opportunity to comment on specific wording through a rulemaking process.
So that would be more of a broader assumption on what we require, and then we would go into rules making to define, narrow it down for them. I'm okay with that.
Well, I threw something out. I wasn't really happy with it, so let's see if we can recreate it, and somebody just shout out better phrases. Each electric utility shall file annually with the commission a report outlining, indicating, again, this is more providing guidance for drafters, but outlining, indicating, reporting on the extent of their smart grid deployment, their plans to deploy smart grid, and the cost effectiveness and other information on such deployments. Annually until January 1st, 2013, which would be three annual reports, 2010, 2011, 2012, sunsetting January 1st, 2013.
Do we need to mention the commission can extend that, or would that be a rule?
I don't know.
I think the order could state that at the conclusion of the 3 years, the commission will determine whether to extend the period or not. And my other question is, I think you said until January 1st, 2013. When would the first one be due?
My thought would be I'd give them to the end of next year, 2010. So 13 months.
Okay.
Are we going to jam them up that last year then? If we're going to January? Their first one would be in January of 11, right?
They'd have till December 31st of 2012 to complete their last report.
Okay. Okay.
Now maybe the sunset date should be December 31st, 2012. I'm certainly open to...
Mr. Chairman, this would not, the intent, well, let me ask it this way. Would it be the intent to require them to provide this information prior to undertaking investments? Or would they be allowed, I would certainly hope so, be allowed to have some leeway from a standpoint of presenting what their intent was? And then if, because this is such a dynamic industry, that they would be provided the opportunity to change those plans, certainly, without any sort of repercussions.
Boy, that's a really great point, and something that I didn't make clear. My intention would be that it would just be submission for informational purposes, that there no approval would be sought nor required. I mean, ultimately, our prudency review, I mean, if it's their money, well, then go invest whatever you want. I mean, we really start to care when it's ratepayer money, and frankly, it's not ratepayer money until they file a rate case with those expenses in a historic test year as a known and measurable adjustment. So I think you're right. We would want to make clear in the order that the commission would not need to approve those filings. Other discussion? Hearing none, and I thought, you tell me, I mean, it's your, you know, your idea. I don't know that it makes sense in the smart grid information. I mean, that really has more to do with information relayed to consumers, not just consumers, but they say purchasers, but more under consideration of smart grid investments, that there would be a new A. That's the wording we've discussed. B and C would go away.
That's correct.
Okay, great. With that, we'll proceed to vote. Hansen?
Aye.
Colbeck?
Aye.
Johnson votes aye. Motion carries. I will move that the commission reject smart grid information as a standard. Any discussion? Hearing none, we'll proceed to vote. Hansen?
Aye.
Colbeck?
Aye.
Johnson votes aye. Motion carries. With that, we've got the two natural gas standards. The first is energy efficiency. The good news is we have worked through the wording on this. For discussion's sake, I will move that the commission adopt... A and B, the same wording that appeared in A and B of the electric standard, and C would not be a part of this natural gas standard. So to make it clear, it would say, each natural gas utility shall integrate cost-effective energy efficiency resources into the plans and planning processes of the natural gas utility and adopt policies establishing cost-effective energy efficiency as a priority resource. I do think staff made some very good comments about how this means something quite different in the context of a natural gas utility than an electric utility. This does not come with it any reporting requirement as the electric standard does, but I do think it makes it a little clearer that our expectations for natural gas are the same as they are for electricity.
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
Is it your intent to drop off the last portion of B in the plans and planning process of the natural gas utility?
I think our new A from Electric does a good job of that because it says integrate cost-effective energy efficiency resources into the plans and planning processes of the natural gas utility.
All right, thank you.
Now, that being said, as I read it, Commissioner, I mean, there certainly isn't anything wrong with also including plans and planning processes in B. So if that is wording where you're more comfortable with, I'm totally comfortable with that.
It is. I appreciate that.
Okay, great. Then we will include plans and planning processes in both A and B. Is there value to also including that plans and planning processes in our electric B? I sort of like consistency.
Forgive me, I thought it had been included. So,
it's included in A. I'm sorry.
I didn't pay close enough attention if it was not.
I was kind of under, I thought you had said plans and I thought that was part of your motion.
It's in A, but not in B.
Oh.
And so for a natural gas B, Commissioner Hansen is more comfortable with adopt policies establishing cost-effective energy efficiency as a priority resource in the plans and planning processes of the electric utility. Natural gas utility. It's in A for electric and it's in A for natural gas. It just doesn't appear in B, and I don't think it hurts to have it in B. So at least for natural gas, the wording is added to the motion. Any further discussion? Hearing none, we'll proceed to vote. Hansen?
Aye.
Colbeck?
Aye.
Johnson votes aye. Motion carries 3-0. We'll proceed to discussing rate design modifications. And again, by way of summary, we heard from quite a bit from Mr. Thurber's testimony that staff was largely uncomfortable, particularly with B subpart I, and there was no support in the industry for that. Now there was some discussion about the relative value of other portions of that, of subpart B. Discussion.
Mr. Chairman, I guess my comments would parallel those that we made as we were discussing the the electric standards, and think that perhaps some modification of B could take place, but I'm more inclined to accept A and not accept B.
Okay, if it's okay for you, Commissioner Hansen, we'll call that a motion to mimic the wording in electric A and natural gas A, which would be the rates allowed to be charged by any natural gas utility may align utility incentives with the delivery of cost-effective energy efficiency and promote cost-effective energy efficiency investments. Any discussion on that motion? Hearing none, we'll proceed to vote on. I'm getting ahead of us a little bit. Commissioner Hansen indicated discomfort with B. Commissioner Colbeck, thoughts?
I should have clarified. We're adopting A as it's read, correct?
Well, that's the a motion that's up for discussion right now.
And
we need a shall.
And not B.
The motion itself does not address B.
Okay.
Or maybe it does.
It's simply A.
Mm-hmm. Commissioner Hansen?
I think there's some dialogue on the may and the shall in A. Is that correct?
Staff was just thinking for consistency's sake to be consistent with the decision you made for the electric side of things.
And I did say may,
did say
although
may.
It should be emphasized because it's Commissioner Hansen's motion, so.
you articulated it very well. So the misunderstanding was that some of the staff thought that we said shall instead of may. Okay, appreciate your bringing that forward. The motion did state may, but thank you very much.
If I may, Commissioner, I would point out the difference was the other one talked about rates, where this one talks about plans and planning processes. So it's a bit different.
Well, although we're talking about, like, if you look at the original A, rate design modifications, the that also talks about rates.
Rates allowed to be
charged. Yeah. Other comments? And then, Commissioner Hansen, did you want B addressed in your motion as specifically dropped off, or do you just want to leave that for another motion?
We could leave that for another motion. However, either direction that you wish to take, it's your prerogative as chair how you'd like to take it. But I don't really find much that I like in B to support. So I had left it just from a comment that, so that if there was something that either one of you saw in B that you really felt should be retained, or then as Commissioner Colbeck has the opportunity to sway me once once again if there's something in there that he thinks is necessary.
I like a lot of what B says. I feel like A makes it redundant. You know, if we're saying that there should be incentives, then. Okay, well, let's proceed to vote with the Hansen motion being to have rate design, natural gas, mimic in large part rate design modifications for electric. Things to emphasize would be that it's may and not shall, and that anything past A is not a part of the motion, that would drop off as a part of the standard. Any further discussion on the motion? Hearing none, we'll proceed to vote. Hansen?
Aye.
Colbeck?
Aye.
Johnson votes aye. Motion carries 3-0. I think that is all for PURPA, and I believe it's all for our agenda. We'll just remind everybody that we do have announcements indicating upcoming meetings and gatherings of the commission. And unless there's any further business to come for the commission, is there a motion to adjourn?
Move to adjourn.
Motion has been made. We'll proceed to vote. Hansen?
Aye.
Colbeck?
Aye.
Johnson votes aye. Motion carries 3-0. Thank you and have a great day.